This is side two of the recording with Mrs. Ned Arbery.
We were discussing whether or not we could compare Herbert Dow and Willard Dow in any way. I'm completely lost, too.
Yeah, that's hard. Herbert Dow was the chemist, I guess you would say, in the business. He knew what he was trying to produce. He knew what he was trying to do in chemistry. He was a plant man, you might say. He was the inventor, the man, the engineer who built the factories, if you will. I don't think that's right. That's not the right term. And also was imaginative enough to go out to see where his ideas, his inventions, his things that he felt he could produce, how they would fit into world markets. He slammed right up against a brick wall of the German trusts and the British trusts, and which were set up in such a way as to be monopolistic and to keep a chemical industry from growing in the United States. And he set himself on a course to break that, mm-hmm. and that was successful. So that's where he is called a pioneer. He's a pioneer chemist, but he was a pioneer for the chemical industry as a whole,
right.
for the United States. Then
he always seemed to be Johnny on the spot, though.
Yes.
He was at the right place at the right time, or he had the right product
for the market. Yeah, he had a lot of courage and a very stubborn will, where other people might have gotten discouraged and say, well, no, I'll go back and do what I know I can do within the laws and within the existing industry, I'll just try to do what I can do. But he thought in a much larger way than that and determined that this country should have a chemical industry of its own. That was a truly astounding accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
It was truly astounding thought in the first place.
Do you think he thought that in the first place? Or do you think he thought, here was an opportunity in Midland to get this brine, and maybe that was the beginning, and then he just was Johnny on the spot. As things started to grow and develop and opportunity came,
yes.
he was there, and he was ready for it.
He was ready for it, and he was willing to fight for it.
That's important.
Very important. I mean, this trip, taking his family abroad for 2 years, was crucial in his ability to then come back and decide how he could compete against those monopolies and produce his product at a lower price and make it available in this country and add sort of stranglehold.
Right, and it's kind of important and unusual that he went, mm-hmm. that he didn't send someone, but that he went himself.
Well, it was a very small operation in those days. He would be the logical one to go.
Oh, okay.
Then consider how important this is when World War I comes along. There's a chemical industry in the United States. Small as it was, but it was there to help. And the same can be said of World War II. Now, the present conflict in Vietnam is a much more painful subject. And I don't think any outsider ever knows the pain and anguish that has been caused by the napalm question within the closed doors of management of Dow. In the boardroom, you might say. The decision to go ahead and make napalm when it's a terribly unpopular decision. And yet they took the position that their government asked them to do this, and they felt they had to do this, that it was their duty. Disliking it. But
were you personally involved in all the... I think Mr. White had handled it very well, but did you feel any personal involvement with the various anti-Dow sentiment?
Well, yes, it was around. Of course, the people that bore the brunt of it were the people who were recruiting for Dow, who would go on college campuses, and they had so many unpleasant experiences. They really had to be very stable personalities to put up with that kind of harassment that
mm-hmm.
they got, personal harassment, and in physical danger at times. The only time that people in Midland were really made aware of how violently some people felt about this would be at the time of the annual meetings, shareholders meetings, when many protesters would show up. And the people going into the meeting would have to walk down a whole long line of protesters and posters and this kind of thing. And I don't think that anybody ever was very happy about the situation, but I think that they felt that the protesters were being unfair in singling out one industry to harass in such a way, because they had a very dramatic product that they could talk about. Right. There isn't any industry in the United States that wasn't supporting war in many
involved.
Ways.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And still are today. And I personally am glad, and I think many are, that Dow is no longer making napalm. Indeed, they haven't, I think, for 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Why do you say you're glad?
I'm glad because I don't. Now I'm into personal opinion, but I disapprove strongly of the Vietnam conflict. I think it's terrible, and I dislike the fact that it's a war that's going on so far away from us that we can almost fantasize it into being Never Never Land. It doesn't seem close to us, particularly today when these bombers flying 10 miles high, dropping bombs, more bombs than were ever dropped in World War II, on targets and people that they can't even see. I feel it's immoral, and I'm probably politically naive, but I personally do not like anything about it, and I'm happy that Dow is not manufacturing a weapon as horrible and as ugly as napalm.
So that now it's in no way supporting the war, even though it's a minimal thing.
Well, now I would have to hold back on that. I'm not sure, because
the other products,
all industries, there are other
right,
things
yeah.
certainly that are being used in the.
If not raw materials,
yeah.
Whatever that
magnesium in the airplanes,
right.
Who
right.
knows?
Yeah, so we couldn't really.
But in that sense, the whole United States is involved, and I don't like to single out any one industry as being wrong. I think that we as a people have taken a wrong turn.
Yeah.
This is my personal opinion. I am not speaking for other members of the family, and it wouldn't be right if I did.
Back to the other members of your family, though. You as a family, with Lee and Ted and yourself, and I can't remember, there was a daughter, wasn't there another one?
My daughter?
No, weren't there?
No, I have two brothers, that's all, an older brother and a younger brother.
There were just the three of you.
Right.
Were you close as a family?
Very much so.
Growing up?
Yes, very, very much so. And had a wonderful life, really. My parents liked to travel and would take us along whenever they could. I'm not talking about when we were little, not like my grandparents did, but when we were, when I was 14, for instance, we went to South America. We were gone for 6 weeks, and a family traveling for 6 weeks together has got to be a close family.
Mm-hmm.
And we had such good times together. We would travel frequently together across the country to California, and there'd be these long train rides playing gin rummy, or in fact I think in those days we played just plain rummy and keep score all the way across the country and then get a gift for someone at the end who had won. We had a wonderful trip to England in 1938, just before World War II broke over there.
What kind of interest did the children have? Anything in particular when growing up?
Well,
cars, diddling.
Yes, I guess my both brothers, they inherited from Alden Dow something we called a buckboard. It was really just a little automobile. Not really an automobile. It was really just a little platform on four wheels with a little dinky engine that I can remember they're puttering around with. Model airplanes were a big thing when we were little children. We went to summer camp. All of us enjoyed summer camp. For 3 or 4 years, I think we did that. Then we went away to school, and I think this is why the emphasis so much was at vacation times of trying to do things together, because during the school year we were scattered so far apart. My older brother went to college in California. I went to college in Connecticut, and my brother Ted went to college at Cornell. Now, given our ages, it's obvious that World War II was going to interrupt mm-hmm. our lives, and did indeed. Ted had to leave Cornell. He was in the Army, I believe, for 3 years. 2 years of that he was in the South Pacific. And when he came back, he finished up at Cornell. He took a 5-year chemical engineering course at Cornell. The last year he was there, he was married. And he married Donalda Lockwood, who was herself a chemistry major from the University of Michigan.
Now, where was she from?
She was from Monroe, Michigan. She and Ted met while she was at Kingswood School and he was at Cranbrook School. Those are sister institutions in Bloomfield Hills. But during the war years, of course, they were separated. But when he came back, I noticed that he looked her up. And then they were married about a year later. My older brother elected to stay in California after he graduated from college. He loved California, and I think he felt it was good to get away from the family. He was, however, delighted to go to work for Dow. And he worked first in Torrance, a small plant down south of Los Angeles, and then he was in the Los Angeles office. And then in 1950, shortly after my mother died, he moved to San Francisco and was in charge of the Dow office in San Francisco until 2 years ago, I believe, when he took early retirement. He has 2 children, both of whom lived in California.
Any indication of, as children, of leadership quality in the boys?
I would say that my brother Lee was very, very much like my father, in that he was a born salesman, enthusiastic person, loved people and good with people, and a very good salesman. My brother Ted was more intellectual, more introspective, a philosopher. In fact, I think it's interesting, after he graduated from Cornell, and after he'd gotten his Army service behind him and went to work for Dow, he made the statement, okay, I have my degree in chemical engineering and I have my job and now I'm going to start my education. And he started reading philosophy. And I don't mean he is a dilettante about this. He set himself out a course of reading that continues to this day. And someone referred to him at their most recent annual meeting as being a philosopher of tempered steel.
So this would maybe be his major pastime, would be reading and studying. Not a pastime, but a second occupation.
A second occupation, which he didn't have a great deal of time for during his tenure as president because he worked so hard and such long hours. He never worked from 8 to 5. He'd come home and have dinner with his family and then be at work again. Not at the office. He'd work at home. But he was a producer. Tremendous what he was able to accomplish. He set himself certain goals, and when they were accomplished, he astounded everyone by announcing that he was going to retire as president. He remains as a member of the board. But this, again, is carrying out what he believes, and philosophically what he believes. He said that a man in this job has about 8 to 10 years where he can be really imaginative and innovative and productive. And at the end of 8 or 10 years, he's going to start repeating what he's always done. Mm-hmm. He probably won't carry that degree of imagination and aggressiveness any longer. This is just human nature. The incredible thing to me is that he not only recognized this, but applied it to himself. I know of very few people who have the character to give up the rights and privileges of a man who's the president of a major corporation. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a seductive kind of a thing. Power is seductive. And he willingly just gave it away on the basis of his convictions, of his philosophy. As I say, I think it's an astounding thing to do. Now he has a chance to use his creative abilities and his leadership abilities to branch out in many different ways.
To relax.
to relax. He'll work just as hard because that's the way he's made. But he'll play with things more. He'll have a chance to try this, try that. And specifically, what he can really give to people in his work as a consultant, I guess you'd call it, is to give advice on internal management procedures and internal management. That's really where his genius lay, I think. The reorganization of Dow as it had to be affected by its becoming a global industry, mm-hmm. which to the outsider might seem pretty simple, but it isn't. It means constantly evaluating jobs and people and things that need doing, areas of concern. It's a very complex thing, and this was his genius, I'd say. Each one of the presidents has had, which has been good for Dow, and I hope and believe that Ben Branch, now as president, will continue this sort of aggressive leadership. And I am sure that when he reaches 65, that he will retire. They now have a mandatory retirement. 65.
Now, I'm confused because I know he is young, but is he also a Dow? He's married to...
No.
Isn't there a Branch married to Alden Dow's daughter?
No.
No? Okay. I
don't know. No, Ben Branch is the first president of the company who has no relationship with anyone in the Dow family. Whatsoever. He is not younger than Ted. He's older than Ted. See, Ted is not yet 50. I think that Ben Branch must be about 59. I'm not just sure.
Oh, I'm not even sure. What was Alden Dow married Vanita?
Veda.
Veda? Bennett. Oh, that's
E.W. Bennett's daughter. Okay. That's right.
That's
E.W. Bennett was one of the first men on board with Dr. Dow, still alive in his 90s.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
No, see, I didn't look into that area. I didn't know. Is he still alert?
Up until a year ago, I would say yes. He's very frail now, very old, blind, and he's very alert at times, but has other times when he's not. Which
because
is
he
perfectly
certainly
natural.
Had a genius as far as financial matters.
Yes.
That was another thing I think that Herbert Dow had a knack for, finding the right men for the right job.
And letting them go.
And letting
ahead.
Them go.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It was really interesting. As children, how do you remember your father as a child?
Oh, with great warmth and affection. I always just adored him. He was full of fun. He was a man who never brought troubles or worries home from the office. When he walked in the door, the job didn't come home with him.
Did he have an awful lot of time to spend?
No, he traveled a lot. He had to travel a lot, so time with him was very precious. I also remember he would play the piano by ear. He could play beautifully. He'd come in the door, usually around 5:30 or 5:45, and go sit down at the piano and play. And this was something that sort of made the whole household. It was a happy, happy time, and it always set a nice mood for dinner. And dinner was a precious thing to me because we all of us talked a lot. Argue and not fight, but argue and talk and discuss, and we were always encouraged to do this by our parents. And when I went away to school, the thing that I missed most was family dinner, because that's where we all got together at the end of the day and shared everything with one another. Now, I'm sure there were times when my father would be under great tension or fatigue or anxiety about work or anything, but this I never knew. This was never shown at home. Probably my mother knew it. Mm-hmm. I know my mother knew it, but we children did not. I remember during the Depression, speaking of the Depression earlier, my father coming home from Chicago one time and saying, you know, it's really dangerous to walk down the street at night if you have a nice overcoat on, because you're warm and there are people there who are cold and are desperate and need a coat. It made a great impression on me, and he said at the time, none of us here in Midland realize how lucky we are. We're not feeling it like people in the cities are. That's all I know about the Depression.
Actually, Midland really didn't experience
the
Depression.
Midland really did not experience the Depression, not in the traumatic way that other people did.
Right.
My mother was the most wonderful, warm-hearted, generous, great lady, and I think many people would tell you that. And it was indeed a tragedy. She died at the age of 54, very, very suddenly. Just put her head down and died. While on a trip to New York with my father. This was very hard for all of us to take, and I think it took that for the rest of us to realize how hard we'd leaned on her all our lives. She'd always been there, and she was, well, just her warmth and her love and her generosity and her concern were always there. You knew it was always there, and it was a tremendous loss. It was terribly hard on my father. He was just new in his job as president of the company, and she was so proud of him and the way he was doing this. And people felt his grief, people in town and people within the company. And at the end of the first year, of his first year as president of Dow, someone, I don't know who, circulated a petition through the plant that got 5,000 signatures on it saying something about a job well done. And I don't imagine, this might have happened anyway, but I think a lot of people were doing this to say that they realized that he had done this job real well despite a very, very deep grief. And my father later married again, and I'm glad that he did. I don't think he's the kind of man who could have lived alone.
Was he like, you said your brother, Ted, was very studious in that he enjoyed being the student. Was your father like that?
No, not as much. My mother was, very much. My mother studied all her life, and I think she inculcated a love of books and studying into Ted and me, more so perhaps than my older brother. Although there were many evenings at home where we would, either mother or father would read aloud. And my older brother to this day loves to read aloud or to be read aloud to by his wife or to his children or back and forth. So these are very strong influences that have come down. As you can see, I adore books and reading, and I like to have some directed reading, not aimless reading. I did not finish college because of the war, and I probably, you know, if it had been peacetime, I would have gone on and graduated from college and then gotten married. But I feel in many ways that I have done the equivalent of a college degree, though I don't have the...
Sometimes I think keeping up with your family, as you said, the dinner conversations kind of is the spark that makes you want to go and read and be up on things. I'm surprised, that you haven't mentioned anyone who liked to tinker. I don't know, have a garage chemistry.
Yes, well, not to an overwhelming degree. Now, maybe the reason for that is that we were away at boarding school, whereas if we had stayed here in Midland at high school, there might have been more of this as we were growing older, mm-hmm. you see, mm-hmm. the brothers I'm speaking of now, particularly if you're talking about tinkering. Or,
right. Considering the careers they went on
that
to.
That they went on to, yes. Well, my brother Ted did more of us of this sort of thing. I mean, I can remember again with a chemistry set and with a little steam engine and things like that and this little car I speak of. My older brother I think of more with the model airplanes. And in those days, you made model airplanes, and you flew them in contests and in regional contests.
Oh.
It was really, I don't think it's done today.
No.
And it involved quite a lot of skill. And you'd take ball and tissue paper and glue and all these things. It was very tricky, precise.
Competition, too.
And stiff competition.
Oh.
And I remember one time going to one of these, this must be Ice City competition. It was in some huge gym. It was not in Midland. It must have been in Bay City or Saginaw. And watching the boys fly their planes in competition. I was never encouraged by them to try to get into this. I'd hang around the fringes and watch it all, but I never really was allowed to get in there and make my own. And then you'd wind it up with a rubber band. This is how they were propelled.
Yeah. What do, in the age of women's liberation, what do Dao women do?
You mean members of my family?
Right.
Well, I would say we're very much a liberated group. I think that anyone who knows who they are and who has any discipline, self-discipline, I think is a liberated person. And I'm not too concerned with the outer aspect of women's lib. I don't have to be. I'm fortunate as can be because I feel I am liberated. And my husband lets me do whatever I want to in the community, like working for Saginaw Valley College and for the Cranbrook Academy of Art. Those are things that I care about very deeply and spend a lot of time on. I love my home. I love to cook. I love to fix flowers and things like that. I find or feel that I have probably a deeper contentment and more liberation than many people who are screaming so hard.
And fighting for it so hard.
Yes.
But you don't have any upcoming electrical or chemical engineering degrees among the great-grandchildren.
Not that I'm aware of. Not that I'm aware of. There are many interesting personalities among the grandchildren. Randy Rieker, who lives here in Midland, is quite a force in Republican politics. This is something I could never do. I just don't care about politics.
Herbert Dow ran for the city council of Midland, though. He was involved.
Oh, yes, that's right, way back then.
So, yes.
No, there are other ways of being involved than being in politics, I guess that's the way I'd put it. I want to be involved with my community and to do whatever I can for it, but temperamentally, I'm not suited for politics. My cousin is, and she's good at it. She's smart as a whip, and she's willing to work very, very hard. She does spend an enormous amount of time on it, and her husband encourages her to do this. Now, there's a liberated woman.
Right.
In a political year like this, she is away from home every day. She drives down to Lansing every day and comes back. She doesn't go down and stay for the week. She wants to come home for dinner with her family and be with her family. But you can see she's pretty dedicated to do something like that.
That's still a trip every day.
Mm-hmm. Get a little tired of it after a while. Well, Ted's wife, Donnie, is very much of a liberated woman, I would say, has done very interesting things in the field of education. She became interested in a program down at Oakland that was beamed toward women of middle age. Particularly in the beginning, this was beamed toward executives' wives and how they might find a satisfying identity for themselves, being married to a very busy, high-powered executive. Their children are grown out of the nest.
It isn't difficult.
Very difficult. And these women are bright and well-educated and how to go about it. Well, Donnie became intrigued with this, went through this course at Oakland, and then herself became trained to go out and run little seminars or groups in other communities.
Oh, I had never heard of that.
Yes. And she is hoping that one day we can start one of these at Saginaw Valley College. She has talked with Dr. Capone and various other people out there about doing this, and I think some come about. Right now, the problem is budget.
And to space, too. The space is rather limited.
And she's done extensive studying in psychology and psychiatry. Very much a student herself. Has
her own interests, very
own
much
interest,
her own interests.
And she and Ted have never taken any interest whatsoever in social life, quote, quote. My brother felt that when he was president of the company that his job was to worked very hard for the company, and that part of that was not entertaining, company entertaining.
Well, that's interesting. Is that typical, or is was
that's
that...
typical of Ted and of Donnie? They felt that was not important, and I don't think they ever indulged in any of that sort of thing. It just didn't believe in it. And if this is true, it isn't necessary in a company. It maybe is if you're starting a small department, you want to get morale or esprit de corps or something. You will try to entertain them or get them together. But when a